Okay, we are continuing chapter 31 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Let's get this over here so we can read it.
Okay. So you remember they had just taken an exam where they saw Hagrid
getting in a fight.
That evil woman, gasped Hermione, who seemed to be having difficulty talking due to rage, trying to sneak up on Hagrid in the middle of the night. She clearly wanted to avoid another scene like Trelawney's, said Ernie McMillan sagely, squeezing over to join them. Hagrid did well, didn't he? Said Ron, who looked more alarmed than impressed. How come all the spells bounced off him? It'd be his giant blood, said Hermione shakily. It's very hard to stun a giant. They're like trolls, really, really tough. But poor Professor McGonagall, 4 stunners straight to the chest. And she's not exactly young, is she? Dreadful, dreadful, said Ernie, shaking his head pompously. Well, I'm off to bed. Night, all. People around them were drifting away. Still excitedly talking about what they'd just seen. At least they didn't get to take Hagrid off to Azkaban, said Ron. I expect he's gone to join Dumbledore, hasn't he? I suppose so, said Hermione, who looked tearful. Well, this is awful. I really thought Dumbledore would be back before long. But now we've lost Hagrid, too. They traipsed back to the Gryffindor common room to find it full. The commotion out in the grounds had woken several people, who hastened to rouse their friends. Seamus and Dean, who had arrived ahead of Harry, Ron, and Hermione, were now telling everyone what they had heard from the top of the astronomy tower. Why sack Hagrid now? Said Angelina Johnson, shaking her head. It's not like Trelawney. He's been teaching much better than usual this year. Umbridge hates part humans, said Hermione bitterly, flopping down onto an armchair. She was always going to try to get Hagrid out. And she thought Hagrid of putting Nifflers in her office, piped up Katie Bell. Oh, blimey, said Lee Jordan, covering his mouth. It's me been putting Nifflers in her office. Fred George left me a couple. I've been levitating them in through a window. She'd have sacked him anyway, said Dean. He was too close to Dumbledore. That's true, said Harry, sinking into an armchair beside Hermione's. I just hope Professor McGonagall's all right, said Lavender, tearfully. They carried her back up to the castle. We watched through the dormitory window, said Colin Creevy. She didn't look too well. Madame Pomfrey will sort her out, said Alicia Spinett firmly. She's never failed yet. It was nearly 4 in the morning before the Gryffindor common room was cleared. Harry felt wide awake. The image of Hagrid sprinting away into the dark was haunting him. He was so angry with Umbridge, he couldn't think of a punishment bad enough for her, though Ron's suggestion of having her fed to a box of starving, blast-ended scroots had its merit. He fell asleep contemplating hideous revenges and arose from bed 3 hours later feeling distinctly unrested. Their final exam, History of Magic, was not to take place until that afternoon. Harry would have liked very much to go back to bed after breakfast, but he had been counting on the morning for a spot of last-minute studying. So instead he sat with his head in his hands by the common room window, trying hard not to doze off as he read through some of the notes stacked 3.5 feet high that Hermione had lent him. The 5th years entered the Great Hall at 2 o'clock and took their places in front of the overturned examination papers. Harry felt exhausted. He just wanted this to be over so he could go back and sleep. And tomorrow, he and Ron were going to go down to the Quidditch pitch. He was going to have a fly on Ron's broom and savor their freedom from studying. Turn over your papers, said Professor Marchbanks from the front of the hall, looking over the giant hourglass. You may begin. Harry stared fixedly at the first question. It was several seconds before it occurred to him that he had not taken in a word of it. There was a wasp buzzing distractedly against one of the high windows. Slowly, torturously, he began to write an answer. He was finding it very difficult to remember names and kept confusing dates. He simply skipped question 4. In your opinion, did wand legislation contribute to or lead to better control of goblin riots in the 18th century? Thinking that he would go back to it if he had time at the end. He had a stab at question 5. How was the Statute of Secrecy breached in 1794? And what measures were introduced to prevent recurrence? But I had a nagging suspicion that he had missed several important points. He had a feeling vampires had come into the story somewhere. He looked ahead for a question he could definitely answer, and his eyes alighted on question number 10. Describe the circumstances that led to the foundation of the International Confederation of Wizards, and explain why the warlocks of Liechtenstein refused to join. I know this, Harry thought, though his brain felt torpid and slow. He could visualize a heading in Hermione's writing, The Formation of the International Confederation of Wizards. He had read those notes only this morning. He began to write, looking up now and again to check the large hourglass on the desk beside Professor Marchbanks. He was sitting right behind Parvati Patil, whose long dark hair fell on the back of her chair. Once or twice he found himself staring at the tiny golden lights that glistened in it, and she moved her head very slowly, and had to give his own head a little shake to clear it. The first supreme mugwump of the International Confederation of Wizards was Pierre Bonaccord, but his appointment was contested by the wizarding community of Liechtenstein, because all around Harry, quills were scratching on parchment, like scurrying burrowing rats. The sun was very hot on the back of his head. What was it that Bonaccord had done to offend the wizards of Liechtenstein? Harry had a feeling it had something to do with trolls. He gazed blankly on the back of Parvati's head again. If only he could perform legitimacy and open a window into the back of his head, and see what it was about trolls that had caused the breach between Pierre Bonaccord and Liechtenstein. Harry closed his eyes and buried his face in his hands so that the glowing red of his eyelids grew dark and cool. Bonaccord had wanted to stop troll hunting and give the trolls rights, but Liechtenstein was having problems with a tribe of particularly vicious mountain trolls. That was it. He opened his eyes. They stung and watered at the sight of the blazing white parchment. Slowly he wrote 2 lines about trolls, then read through what he had done so far. It did not seem very informative or detailed, yet he was sure Hermione's notes on the Confederation had gone on for pages and pages. He closed his eyes again, trying to see them, trying to remember. The Confederation had met for the first time in France. Yes, he had written that already. Goblins had tried to attend and been ousted. I had written that too. And nobody from Liechtenstein had wanted to come. Think, he told himself, his face in his hands, while all around him quills scratched out never-ending answers and the sand trickled through the hourglass in front. He was walking along the dark, cool corridor to the Department of Mysteries again, walking with a firm and purposeful tread, breaking occasionally into a run, determined to reach his destination at last. The black door swung open for him as usual, and here he was in the circular room with its many doors. Straight across the dark stone floor, and through the second door, patches of dancing light on the walls and floor, and that automechanical clicking, but no time to explore, he must hurry. He jogged the last few feet to the third door, which swung open just like the others. Once again, he was in the cathedral-sized room, full of shelves and glass spheres. His heart was beating very fast now. He was going to get there this time. When he reached number 97, he turned left and hurried along the aisle between 2 rows. But there was a shape on the floor at the very end, a black shape moving about the floor like a wounded animal. Harry's stomach contracted with fear and excitement. A voice issued from his own mouth, a high, cold, empty voice, empty of any human kindness. Take it from me, lift it down now. I cannot touch it, but you can. The black shape on the floor shifted a little. Harry saw a long white-fingered hand, clutching a wand, rise on the end of his own arm, and he heard the high, cold voice say, Crucio. The man on the floor let out a scream of pain, attempted to stand, but fell back, writhing. Harry was laughing. He raised the wand, the curse lifted, and the figure groaned and became motionless. Lord Voldemort is waiting. Very slowly, his arms trembling, the man on the ground raised his shoulders a few inches and lifted his head. His face was blood-stained and gaunt, twisted in pain, yet rigid with defiance. want to kill me, whispered Sirius. Undoubtedly I shall in the end, said the cold voice. But you will fetch it for me first, Black. You think you have felt pain thus far? Think again. We have hours ahead of us and nobody to hear you scream. But somebody screamed as Voldemort lowered his wand again. Somebody yelled and fell sideways off a hot desk onto the cold stone floor. Harry hit the ground and awoke, still yelling, his scar on fire, as the Great Hall erupted all around him. And that's the end of chapter 31. Next we'll read chapter 32, called Out of the Fire. And I hope you like that, my kitten. I love you so much. This means so much. Hey, baby boo. Beautiful.